in stock, you know. I would try that. Back to you, Dick.
You got somebody trying to come in from the east?
And I have a phone number for this as well.
Yeah, what's the brand name of the one that you found on the internet, Paul? And what's the search engine of address? You can go to Google or something like that. How did you find this? What was your search word, Paul? W2NK2IW? And then I'll pick up the person from the east.
Hello? It's a packet transformer, so looks like it looks good. Supplyhouse.com is what you go to. You know, they have all kinds of stuff. Supplyhouse.com. If Joe really wants, I'll send him the URL, or he can use the phone number. They can call the phone number and just see if it's compatible before you order it, and they have them in stock, and you can get it by Tuesday. Back to you, Dick.
Bravo Zulu's trying to come in on the east.
Bravo Zulu, go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, I wonder if you did a search on YouTube. I keep on underestimating YouTube. I was looking for information on high power capacitors last night, and there had to be 50 or 60 videos. So that might be a good place to look. It might give you some ideas.
Bravo Zulu, why thank you. See if Roy needs any fill on all of the above. I mean, Rich. W2RYY, K2RYW.
Well, I was trying to find the same mechanical transformer with the same mechanical dimensions so I could put it back in the frame the way it goes because it has actually self-tapping. They're not self-tapping. They're machine screws that go on the bottom. The frame is actually tapped. And I don't want to start drilling other holes through the bottom of this thing that sort of glues something together. So if I can't find something that fits from a manufacturer originally, you know, I don't like to hamize things up like that. Not in my best interest to do that.
But you got to be practical, Joe. You don't want to spend your life trying to fix the old one, which could be awfully heroic. If you can find something that's electronically equivalent but mechanically different, and then you include some kind of a mounting scheme, and then put the case over it if it fits all inside, it doesn't have to pass a beauty contest. It doesn't have to be ideal. I presume your main motivation is to make this circuit that you've fallen in love with battery charging electronically operative. And even if it's a little bit homely, nobody's going to walk into your shack and then immediately look at this thing and say, hey, you didn't do it right. That doesn't look pretty as it used to. That's a minor problem. I think your main motivation now is to find an electronic equivalent that will restore operation. And by some means, even if at worst, you have to tie it down with tie wraps so that it's physically held to the PC board. I think that is a possible approach. I wouldn't worry so much about beauty, Joe. W2RYY, K2RYW.
I have a good idea, Dick, and who are you?
It's not mounted to the PC board. The transformer is mounted on the bottom frame of this battery charger. And the PC board stands upright, and the wires in the secondary go to the PC board. And the primary simply goes to a fuse socket that's on the bottom holder, and another wire is just a standoff to the other side of the line cord. I can go buy one on eBay. I could take a chance and buy one on eBay, and only go for like maybe either from $25 to $50 for the whole charger. I was trying to, you know, be like a ham and try to repair it myself if possible. That was the ultimate thing I was trying to do. And it has nothing to do with looks. I just don't want to drill out the holes at the bottom of the mounting plate to try to fit something that's maybe a quarter inch wider or quarter inch longer than what it used to be. There's limited space when you put the case together with this thing, so I got to get something that's similar in physical size. It's not a matter of looking at it, because when the battery charger is put together, you can't see the transformer from the outside anyway. It has nothing to do with looks.
And so we owe Dick. I have an idea.
You got it, Rich.
Okay, maybe Joe can make an adapter plate. mount your transformer to a little adapter plate made out of sheet metal, and drill some holes in this adapter plate to match up the holes in the chassis with the machine screws.
So a metallic interface adapter-like thing. Is that out of the question now, Joe?
Yeah, because I probably won't be able to put the plastic case over the thing to reassemble it if you change the height. I don't have much clearance here between the top of the transformer and the inside of the plastic case. If I make it too high, I won't be able to put the plastic case on and reassemble it like it has, because it's got four fingers that go through the plastic case, and the plastic case has a pocket in it, those finger contacts are what actually touches the battery when you stick the battery in the pocket. So I got to be careful about physical dimensions. I can't do something that's going to raise the plastic or make it so I can't put the plastic down on the bottom plate anymore. That's out of the question.
Anybody have any further questions, any further suggestions for Joe? Give me your call letters right now.
To American Ham Cake.
About the subject, because sometimes things are entertained one way or another, but whatever. Go to the next guy.
All right, Chet is in there.
Chet, go right ahead with your question or comment. You got it, Chet.
eBay for $10 and get a 24-volt DC wall wart, and remove some turns on the secondary. And just use the parts from that. And eBay has a 22-volt wall wart, but it's only 200 milliamps for $9.25, including shipping. But you might try to get a 24-volt and just take some turns off.
And why would I want to do that? That's not what the current requirement was from the original part. Why would I want to do that?
Gee, once it's all wrapped up and back in the plastic case, how is anybody going to look inside? Is this a museum piece that is going to go on display someplace?
No, it's not. Who is in there with the touch tone? What is that all about? Can I have a conversation without being interrupted?
Duct tape fixes everything.
NY2H.
Go ahead, Luke.
All right, I just wanted to jump in quickly while I get a chance. I just want to correct the comment you made before. Somebody was commenting on how nice the machine sounded. Do not give me the credit. It's my team. I have great RF guys, including WB2ZSE, WB2WRK, and they've been doing a lot of the work. The other thing I want to say is the way we have configured the system now is temporary, and just to give the people like on Echolink a chance to get in, we may have to let the machine actually drop occasionally. I know we have the four tones and everything, but if you let it drop occasionally, people can get in. Like W2HL is trying to get in now. They can't hear me because I'm using this link for Echolink, so Echolink doesn't hear me. But if you just let it drop totally once in a while, that would be a good thing. Back to net.
Okay, right now I'm going to let the whole system drop. W2HL, do you have a comment you would like to make, sir? Go right ahead. K2RIW. Maybe I misunderstood. I thought that Lou was telling me W2HL wanted to say something. Okay.
Do you hear me?
I'm hearing you. Go right ahead, Lou.
Yeah, you got to let have it drop completely for him to get in. So just let it drop completely and
no,
hope he's trying
I
now
don't
again.
Have
hold
a comment.
On.
I just I didn't hear any audio, so I pressed the transmit button. I thought that I was knocked off with Echolink. No, I didn't have any. I'm sorry. I don't have any questions.
I'm guessing that was HL, and he has no questions or comments. Okay, we're going to go to the next person that's on our list, which looks like it's Rich and 2EO. Rich and a kitty cat named Marshmallow, at least I think is his name. You got it, Rich and 2EO, K2RIW.
Yes, that's his name, Dick, and 2EO. First of all, I want to give credit to Howie, just in here. W2HL and Barry, M2MB, the two of them went to the animal shelter. There was one at ASPCA on Winters Boulevard near Rockaway. And there's a lot of nice animals there that really need a home. I got one here. Like you said, his name is Marshmallow. He's a kitten. Very, very sweet. It took him about 4 hours, that's all, to get adjusted. And he thinks he acts like I'm God, which of course I'm not. He thinks the world of me, and I think the world of him. I really think people out there should consider adopting a cat or a dog or even a bird. There are a lot of rescue animals out there that need homes desperately. They're in cages. And sometimes some of these places euthanize the animals. They can't find them a home, they put them to death. So it's a good thing to, it's really a good thing to adopt these animals. This guy is a kitten. He's 4 months old. Couldn't be better. He's wonderful. Back to Ned and to you.
Me too, Bravo Zulu. Bravo Zulu, go right ahead, Rich. Who wants to respond about Richie's cat, but I have a question about high power capacitor.
Okay, we're going to finish with Rich and I'll pick you up, Bravo Zulu. There's a number of articles on the internet talking about mental health for retired people. To have an animal as a pet is something that drastically increases the pleasure of people who are retired. One of the discussions I had earlier today with N2EO, the former WB2TCC, that's what he used to be in the old days before he became N2EO, a friend of mine has never smoked a cigarette in his life, but he has a huge amount of lung damage from secondary smoke because his wife that he lives with for the last 55 years has been a heavy smoker. And now he's down to 17% of lung capacity because of secondary smoke. So secondary smoke can be very damaging, even if the person is not a smoker. As such, Rich has realized that his kitty cat, Marshmallow, the kitty cat's lungs can be damaged by secondary smoke. So this may be the motivation to keep the cat healthy. Might be enough motivation for Rich to try for the umpty-umpty time in his life to give up cigarette smoking. So to keep his cat healthy, and that's as good as motivation as any I can think of. Keeping the cat healthy is more important than keeping Rich healthy, but in either case, if he gives up cigarette smoking, he'll save a fortune and be a hell of a lot happier. Okay, I think it was Bravo Zulu. Good luck with that project of keeping Marshmallow happy. Back to Rich for any final comments on this, and how soon are you thinking of going cold turkey on cigarette smoking, Rich? N2EO? And we're all rooting for you if you can do it. And that's a good motivation to keep Marshmallow happy. N2EO, K2RIW, WB2TCC. You got it, Rich.
Okay, Dick, you're making me smile. I'm not off them, okay? But I cut way back today. Barry gave me a good idea. He said, why don't you smoke some of them outside? Weather was conducive, I did that. And I've been taking them out of the... I got bags of cigarettes here from the Indian reservation. And Howie and Barry were kind enough to get me. So what I do now, instead of taking a pile out, I take them out one at a time. So when I need one, I have to think about it. And the whole motivation, like you said, is the cat. And I want to keep him healthy, and it'll help me too. Anyway, like you said, Dick, somebody who, I got a lot of financial problems and things, I'm not going to go into it, but an animal, whether it be a cat or a dog, very healthy thing to do. Back to that. And I really believe people should adopt these animals. A kind thing to do. And to real.
Sunflower seeds.
Okay. sunflower seeds are used to do what? The person who said that, go ahead.
N2RDB said it. And sunflower seeds are used to curb the urge to intake tobacco smoke. I know, because I did it myself many years ago. You buy the, not the ones in the shells, the planters, pre-roasted, pre-salted, in the jar, and you take a little tiny, like a teaspoonful of those, if you get an urge to smoke, and you just chew on them, and there's something in them that helps you. N2RDB, back to net.
Thank you, Tim. Sounds like a good suggestion. One of the things that was a great big whistleblower lawsuit a few years ago is that a person who I think worked for P. Lorelei, one of the major cigarette manufacturers, a person for that organization, revealed with on 60 Minutes with great threatening lawsuits to CBS television. He revealed the fact that cigarette manufacturers have been for years and years putting chemistry into the tobacco, which is known to increase the addiction quality of cigarette smokes. People who want to give up cigarette smoking are fighting this addiction quality of the chemistry that they have added. Another article that you can see on Veritasium YouTube by Mr. Mueller, I can't think of his first name right now, talks about the fact that cigarette smoke is very mildly radioactive. But because the particles are deposited directly on your lung, and they sit there for a long period of time, and they can't be any closer, you know, one cell apart, it turns out that the amount of radiation, nuclear radiation, you get from cigarette smoke is substantial. Even a banana is very mildly radioactive. Cigarette smoke is very mildly, cigarette tobacco is very mildly radioactive, as many things are. But how much nuclear radiation you get, let me drop, is a function of how close you are to the source, inverse square law, and how long is the exposure. In the case of cigarette smoke particles that get deposited on your lung, they're one cell away, they can't be any closer, and they sit there for years. So a cigarette smoker who develops lung cancer, we used to think it's because of carcinogen, nicotine and whatever was doing it. According to Mr. Mueller in his Veritasium article, it could be very well the radiation effect of cigarette smoke may be the reason that people develop lung cancer from it. So there's a lot of motivation to give it up. When you do give up cigarette smoking, you go cold turkey. For the first couple of weeks, you're going to go crazy. Your body is seeing pure oxygen for the first time. All the nerves get very excited. You'll be very high strung. You'll be offending the living daylights of all the people who live around you. But to be forewarned is to be forearmed. You know that when you go cold turkey, you're going to spend a couple of weeks of misery of withdrawal symptoms. But if you know it ahead of time, and you're willing to put up with that misery for the ultimate benefit of getting off of these darn things, get away from that addiction, save a fortune, and be a hell of a lot healthier, it's a very good motivation to do it. Anybody, any final comments on this one? And good luck with, by the way, Marshmallow, the kitty cat, sleeps with Rich. He's got a sleeping companion. And the two of them have a grand old time. Anybody, any further comments? Give me a call, let us right now. KQIW in the TechNet.
WV2GXM.
Mr. GXM, go ahead, Rich.
RDB.
And RDB after that. GXM first.
Dick, you're saying that bananas are slightly radioactive. Is it the potassium in the banana? WB2GXM.
Of course. Yes. Did you give it to me, Dick?
Not yet, but I will. Is it the potassium? Quite possibly it is the potassium, Rich. Again, if you Google the word Veritasium and you start seeing these beautiful science articles by Mr. Mueller, a guy from Australia that's got a whole lot of science articles, you find his science article on the subject of cigarette smoking and you watch it. He went and visited all the high nuclear radiation areas in the world with his Geiger counter. He went to Chernobyl, and he went to the place in Japan. All of a sudden, I can't think of the name of it, where we dropped the atomic bomb. He visited all these places with his Geiger counter and measured the amount of nuclear radiation a person would be exposed to by visiting all these sites. And that amount of nuclear radiation is small compared to what an ordinary cigarette smoker is exposed to because of the radioactivity of the particles of tobacco. Okay, I think the person who gets it next is Tim. N2RDB, go right ahead, K2RIW.
Thank you. Anyway, the whole gist of it is that even the paper has a certain amount of cadmium in it. You know, the tobacco, of course, forget about it. I mean, ever since the Fukushima disaster, you know, we've had radioactive spinach along the West Coast, and God knows what's coming out of the ocean. But, yes, a great deal of the food supply and tobacco, of course, because it's agricultural in nature, is contaminated. So if you're exposing that directly to the lungs, God knows what we're exposing our digestive systems to with what we eat. And to RDB, back to net.
You're the fact that the digestive system, the GI tract, is amazingly robust. When we finally find it out, turn it over to Roy, he'll give you an idea of that. Those acids in your stomach are so acidic, so corrosive, that the lining of your stomach has to periodically replace itself because it's being eaten away by the acids that's dissolving your food. The cells in your gastrointestinal lining are some of the most rapidly reproduced cells in the body. As such, when you get a nuclear radiation exposure, those are the cells being rapidly reproduced that, if they're going to become cancerous on the next cycle of reproduction, you're going to hear about it real fast. That reproductive process of the cells of your lining of your stomach and intestines replacing those cells is part of the reason why you get so darn sick with a high nuclear exposure. And with any other kind. By the way, do in your spare time, go to our YouTube video, use the word Varitasium, V-A-R-I-T-A-S-I-U-M, and Mr. Mueller, and find his beautiful science display of cigarette smoking, where he visits Fukushima and Nagasaki, and the site in Nevada where we did experiments on nuclear bombs. He visits all these sites with his Geiger counter, and even goes up to 40,000 feet in an airliner with his Geiger counter and finds out where in the world are the places with the highest amount of nuclear radiation a human being can expose to. And a cigarette smoker is being exposed to more than a person who dwells in all of those sites. Craziness is something you would never consider. Anyone else, any other further questions or comments on whatever subject we're talking about, give me a call that is right now, K2LIW. Yeah, good luck with that project of keeping Marshmallow healthy. Roy, was I correct in saying that the cells that line your stomach and intestines are the most rapidly reproduced cells in the body? That's the reason why they become sick real fast when the whole human being is given a lethal dose of nuclear radiation. And that's the reason why you start throwing up and your digestive system stops operating real fast. AC2GS, with Science Talk and Mailbag. You've got it, Dr. Roy. AC2GS, K2RIW, and the TechNet. You sound good tonight. The whole machine sounds good.
Forgot about me?
Okay, who is me?
K2 Bravo Zulu.
Sorry about that. Bravo Zulu, you got the floor.
And I have a few comments and then two questions. Real quick. First of all, I implore this has nothing to do with anything that we were talking about. but I implore all of you guys out there to go on YouTube and search for a guy who goes by the name Mr. Carlson, C-A-R-L-S-O-N, Mr. Carlson. To put it mildly, he fixes electronics. He has a video on him fixing a Yaesu 1000, I think it's an MP. It's a work of art, how he goes about it and what he does. He even redesigned the board that Yaesu had in there. And then he has tons of videos on fixing antique electronics. The guy's a genius. Mr. Carlson. Let me let it drop. Now about animals, there was a study that's even more radical, Dick, than you mentioned. It found that people who live alone, if they compared to people who live with animals, the people who live with animals actually live longer by 3 to 4 years than people who just live by themselves. Staggering, if you think about it. So that's that one. Now, on cigarette smoking, and I'm going to let it drop again. Now, a worldwide organization called Nicotine Anonymous, and as the name sounds, it's based on the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. I started the second meeting in the tri-state area in 1989, and I've helped hundreds of people quit smoking. I don't want to go too into it right now, but there are a couple of comments made that one isn't true and a couple need explanation. The one that isn't true or that I never heard about was sunflower seeds or pumpkin seeds or whatever they were. Let me say this. Come a non-smoker, anything will work. The patches will work, the whatever it is, plastic cigarettes, you name it, it'll work. If you don't really want to become a non-smoker with all your soul and all your being, none of it's going to work. And there are two components to the habit of smoking. I'll let it drop again. One is the chemical dependency. And that study, that lawsuit, Dick, was about the delivery mechanism where the cigarette companies were trying harder and harder to come up with a mechanism for the drug nicotine. And by the way, the drug nicotine has killed more people on this planet than every other drug combined. It was about delivering the nicotine into the brain faster, and that was what that lawsuit was about. Okay, there are two parts of cigarette smoking: the chemical dependency. Within 72 hours, nicotine is no longer in your body. The chemical, the drug nicotine, is no longer in your body. But then you have this whole part of it, which is the psychological dependency, and the main part of that is the mouth, the nipple in the mouth part of that, which is the toughest of all of it to break. I'll let it drop. That is so powerful, the muscle in your mouth, to break that is the task at hand after 72 hours when they're Roy may know it more exactly than I do, but I've known it to be 72 hours where they cannot detect nicotine in your bloodstream. So the psychological part of it is the whole deal after 3 days. And if Richie wants to call me or whatever, like I said, I've helped hundreds of people quit smoking. And it's really about educating a smoker more than anything else. And like I said, all the tricks and all the patches and whatever, I've seen them all to work when the person really wants to do it, and I've seen them all to fail when the person doesn't want to do it. Maybe should I drop it for any comments of what I've said so far?
GXM with a comment.
Yeah, I've got a number of questions for you, but GXM first. Go ahead, Rich.
Now, this is WB2GXM. Rich, N2EO, for you. My coworkers are both heavy smokers, and I am not a smoker. And early on, both of my coworkers started vaping. I know there's a whole bunch of stuff, whole bunch of opinions about vaping, but it worked for them. Now they do not smoke. They vape instead, and they don't vape very heavily. But whatever smoke I get exposed to is not cigarette smoke. It's, I can actually tolerate it. I gag on cigarette smoke. So maybe you might want to consider the vaping for your dependency on cigarettes. WB2GXM.
Rich, he has already tried vaping, and the young children, the teenagers that are doing vaping, they're discovering that it is not trouble-free. It also creates health problems. Mr. Bravo Zulu, Nicotine Anonymous, you've been doing that for what length of time? And make a rough guess as to how many people with Nicotine Anonymous have managed to break the habit of cigarette smoking. Give me a rough guess. So how long have you been associated, and have you personally seen 100 people or 1,000 people give it up? Bravo Zulu, K2IW.
I've been associated with it for over 30 years, about 31 years, and I have seen in my own groups that I've led maybe a little short of 200 people quit and quit for good. Also, the thing about vaping, to use an alcohol analogy, that's like moving from scotch to wine. Eventually, vapers will go back to smoking. I would say, I really don't have, I would say it would be in the millions, I would say, of people who have quit smoking as a direct result. And there are other smoking cessation programs. It's not just Nicotine Anonymous, but it's very, very successful, as is Alcoholics Anonymous, which is millions and millions of people have stopped that destructive addiction. But it is, Rich, if you could find a Nicotine Anonymous meeting, I would go to it as soon as you can, because it's so hard to do. Quitting smoking is so hard to do. Being with other people that are doing it, going through it day by day as you are, makes it so much easier. Go ahead, Dick.
Yeah, I'm addicted to amateur radio.
Yeah, me too. And that's a very difficult hobby to break. Ever since I was 16 years of age, 1956, I've been addicted ever since. I'm also addicted to animals. I had a cat that lived until 21 years of age. And when that cat passed away, my goodness, did I suffer. But people who are animal lovers are, in my opinion, a lot nicer to be around, much happier people. It gives them purpose. For Rich to go to a Nicotine Anonymous meeting is not going to be easy. He is a paraplegic. He's, his two legs are chopped off above the knees, so his portability is very small. For him to leave the house and go to some other place requires a whole lot of planning of people who are going to transport his body. So let me ask you, Bravo Zulu, I presume there are websites a person can go to where remotely you can go to a meeting by attending the meeting as a person on the internet, as a guest on my part. Is that true? Bravo Zulu, K2IW.
Sure, there are many groups you can find that are, you know, interactive type self-help groups about smoking. Yeah, start off with nicotineanonymous.com and go from there, and just even, again, YouTube. I mean, guys, I'm astounded whenever I look up what I think is an esoteric thing. There, you know, there are 70 YouTubes on what I'm, you know, I think that I wouldn't even find a result on YouTube for. So look up, you know, on YouTube, smoking cessation or giving up cigarettes or whatever. All I know is that let me put it this way. People focus on the benefit of not dying, you know, from lung cancer. But in actuality, the benefits of living day to day without, forget about the cost of it, forget about the money part at all, but without the effects of nicotine in your body and the gases in your body, the effects of that every day, it makes everything about life, about 24 hours of life, better, and so much better that you're not going to believe it. That is why those of us who have quit, we become evangelists and pains in the asses about it, because we know how much better life can be. The smell of your sheets, that you walk into your apartment and it smells fresh, air, food tastes so much better, so much better. And bad food tastes bad, you know, that much worse also. But there are so many benefits.
Comment.
Now, Wes recognized, but Bravo Zulu, you got suddenly cut off. Did you have a battery that dropped out on you, Rich? Bravo Zulu, K2RIW?
I'm coming off a power supply.
Okay, sounds good. And yes, food tastes better. Life's a lot better. And Mr. Wygand, I think is his name, who became a whistleblower and revealed the fact that they're putting ammonia-like chemistry into the tobacco to increase the addiction, to make it more difficult for people to leave the cigarette, therefore increasing their profit. Boy, there was all kinds of lawsuits when he wanted to go public and announce it on 60 Minutes program. The cigarette companies are so powerful. They were threatening to put CBS television off the air, if you know what I mean, by suing the living daylights out of them. It was a big deal a few years ago. Were you ever a cigarette smoker, Wes? N2XJN, K2RIW? You sound to me like a... If so, you've gotten away from it. You've got it, Wes.
Well, I was a smoker. I was never a smoker. I can light up cigarettes and never get addicted to it. The same like I'm not able to be hypnotized, because hypnosis doesn't work on me. It's 3% of the people in the world that are immune to that. So, yeah, no, I'm not addicted. I can smoke cigarettes just because somebody smokes, but it's probably rather behavioral than addiction. Let me drive. I have some comments.
Dick, can I get to my ham radio questions now?
Yeah, we cut him off too soon. Stand by, Wes. Bravo Zulu, I know you had a question. I'm sorry I forgot about that. Bravo Zulu, go ahead.
I did a loop, a magnetic loop antenna, and I have decided, because of YouTube, to make my own air variable capacitor. It's not hard at all when you see somebody do it. My question is, for the high voltage, you know, because this is a high voltage endeavor, 3,000 volts, roughly, I think, Roy could correct me on that if that's not true. Is it better to make the plates larger and fewer, let's say five plates, both the stator and the rotor plates bigger, or smaller and more of them, let's say 10 smaller or five bigger, in terms of handling this high voltage?
Of the five different definitions of Q, a small magnetic loop antenna is a high Q structure. One of the definitions of Q is the voltage rise at resonance. If your antenna has a Q of 100, that means whatever voltage is coming out of your transmission line from your transmitter, when it goes into that antenna, if it's got a Q of 100, that voltage is going to be raised 100 times. If, for instance, you're using a 50-ohm transmission line and you run 50 watts out of your transmitter, by definition, there is 50 volts at 1 ampere flowing in your 50-ohm transmission line. The 50 volts going into your Q of 100, the lap magnetic loop antenna, means that somewhere in that antenna, 100 times higher than 50, or 5,000 volts, will exist. That capacitor that resonates your loop is going to have to withstand 5,000 volts without arcing over. Air has a dielectric strength of 30,000 volts per centimeter. That tells you what the minimum spacing between the plates must be not to develop an arc over. So as you make the plates larger and you want to keep the capacitance constant, you can now live with a greater spacing and therefore it can tolerate a higher voltage. Or if you use more plates, which is another way of increasing the area. One way of doing a very nice, let me drop. Oh, I've forgotten the exact formula now. Capacitance in picofarads is A over T times a constant. I forget what the constant is. Area of the plates, and T is the thickness of the spacing between them. A over T times some constant. I forget what that constant is. It's in the reference data for radio engineers. We'll tell you how many picofarads you've got for the amount of area you've got on your plate and their spacing. So, there's a trade-off here. If you're worried about arc over, it's only a function of spacing. So you can make the spacing large and therefore not get an arc over, 30,000 volts per centimeter in air, by using larger plates with a greater spacing or more number of plates. Your question, Rich, is are you better off with more plates or single plates with a larger area? That's a mechanical trade-off. Either one can work equally well. So by whatever means you need a certain number of picofarad in that capacitor, you can develop that with multiple plates or larger plates with greater spacing. Multiple plates with, again, greater spacing. That's strictly a function of the mechanical layout you choose. Properly done, either will be equally as effective. There's no huge advantage of one over the other. For mechanical simplicity, two plates that are larger in area with a spacing between them, and by a nylon screw thread, you can change that spacing as a way of tuning it. So I think two larger plates are mechanically simpler than multiple plates with some kind of a meshing mechanism, which is a lot more difficult for you to produce. That's an opinion on my part. Mr. Bravo Zulu, K2LIW, you got it, Rich.
Dick, do you recall the name of the spacing formula?
I'm very unhappy that I forgot the constant.
I have zero.
Say it again?
Isn't that constant epsilon zero 8.85 picofarad per meter?
It could be, but there's a much simpler formula. Now I just thought of it, 0.225. 0.225 A over T. If you want to know the capacitance in picofarads of two plates, take your two plates, calculate the area. I believe it's in square inches, and the spacing is in inches. I think it all works out in inches. 0.225, area in square inches, divided by spacing in inches, gives you the number of picofarad of that capacitor, 0.225 A over T. I wonder if you've ever heard of that formula before, Rich. Mr. Bravo Zulu, K2RIW.
Okay, so it's 0.225 divided by spacing in inches, but that doesn't take into consideration the area of the plates, does it?
Okay, you forgot some of the formula. Let me drop. The formula is capacitance in picofarads equals 0.225 A over T. Area divided by spacing. T is the thickness, the spacing in air. A is area in square inches. Multiplied by 225. That tells you the number of picofarads. Once you know the number of picofarads, and if by some magic you know the number of nanohenries of your coil, you can now force it into resonance with pencil and paper, if you know what I mean. 1 over 2 pi square root of LC. I think it's the formula. Square root of L times C multiplied by 2 pi divided into 1 is the resonant frequency, if I forgot that formula correct. So there's various ways you can work this all out on paper. Mr. Bravo Zulu, K2RIW.
A, is that 225 A over C? Is it 225 multiplied by A divided by C?
Roger, Dodger, you got it. That formula tells you the capacitance in picofarad of two plates where you know the area and you know the spacing. And the error, that formula is, in the real world only has an error of a couple of percent. It gets you well into the ballpark, basically very close to home plate. You've got it, Bravo Zulu.
That's exactly what I was looking for. Okay, so I will report back on how my homebrew variable air capacitor works. Trying to stay away with having to buy that vacuum capacitor. And the last question is, remember we were talking about my screwdriver antenna and putting a long wire of, let's say, 66 feet in place of the radio that was the whip that was screwed into the top of the antenna. Now that long wire is attached to a 9-to-1, and I'm pretty sure it's not a Bowen. That's incorrect. Is it a Bowen or is it a matching transformer? What's the correct term for that 9-to-1 thing? But anyway, my question is, would it make any difference now if I fed the output of that 9-to-1 matching transformer into the top of the screwdriver as opposed to just having that long wire going into the top of the screwdriver? Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, I think the answer to your question is you're going to have to do some experimenting. One of the most magic things that's never written down in any of the books on antennas is the seven most important words in the English language if you're an antenna designer. Those words are, you resonate first, then it will radiate. I don't care if your antenna is the ugliest looking rubber duck or whatever. If you can force the antenna to electronically radiate, regardless of its physical size, and if you've used low loss materials, it will radiate. And if you use low-loss materials, it will radiate with near 100% efficiency. The rubber duck antenna is chastised by a very poor radiation that it doesn't deserve. People think that because the antenna is small, its performance must be small. As long as you haven't made it, in the old days it was made out of nichrome wire so that it had a built-in resistance acting as a dummy load, and therefore it gave you a very good standing wave ratio as an impedance, even though it had lousy efficiency. A modern-day rubber duck antenna can have near 100% efficiency and full performance. Very few of the antennas we ever use are more than a half wave or more than a wavelength long. Therefore, you don't get more gain out of any kind of a physical antenna you're going to use that's only a half wave or less than a wavelength long. The amount of performance you get out of the antenna is strictly its efficiency. If I put 100 watts into it, and 99 watts gets radiated, that's an efficient antenna. And none of them have more gain or less gain if you've used the right kind of material so that it doesn't have internal loss turning your valuable RF energy into heat. And if you've managed by way of some kind of a tuning mechanism, whether it be called an antenna tuner, matchbox, whatever you call it, if you go to the Berkeley program, if you Google the word Berkeley and impedance match, and by way of your vector network analyzer, by way of your antenna analyzer, you know what the impedance of your antenna is. And you go to Berkeley and you tell Berkeley, my antenna is capacitive and it acts like a 30 picofarad capacitor, or it's got a capacitive reactance of 741 ohms, and I want to match it to a 50 ohm system. You tell that information, and I'm doing this at 40... meters, the 7 megacycle band. You give that raw data to the Berkeley program and press go, and it'll give you 16 electronic solutions. A pi network, an L network, an inverted L network, and a pi T and whatever. Choose the one you like. So to do electronic impedance matching, which establishes resonance, that will resonate your yucky antenna. And once it is resonant and made out of low loss materials, it'll radiate like a child. And you think that a physically small antenna must have enough small effective capture area. Absolutely not. That effective capture area is the magic of resonance. That 80-meter dipole you build out of 14-gauge wire. It's 130 feet long. You use the formula. Area is, let me think now. Gain antenna. A dipole antenna out of 14-gauge wire, 130 feet long. If your eyes operated at 80 meters and you could look into that antenna broadside, it has an electronic area of 8,500 square feet. If you look at that antenna, you would see a huge black oval around it with the wire going down the middle of that oval. Therefore, the Con Ed wiring across the street, which is non-resonant, if you're lucky, casts a shadow of a couple of square feet onto your dipole, even though it's the exact same altitude, but your dipole with resonance is an area of 8,500 square feet. If you could eliminate that Con Ed wiring across the street that's casting a shadow on your antenna in the direction of London, the guy you want to talk to, if you could eliminate Con Ed, you'd be eliminating a couple of square feet of shadow on 8,500 square feet. You'd be spitting in the ocean. So when you look at an antenna as a resonating device that radiates, that has an electronic area that you can calculate, it'll give you a little bit more feeling of what's going on. So you're going to have to do a bunch of experiments to find out what works for you to establish the resonance that gives...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Yeah, boy, do we get a very hard timeout these days. And I did it. So some of these principles will give you some of the ideas of what you're working with here, Bravo Zulu. Mr. Bravo Zulu, doing lots of antenna experiments, and slowly we're finding out how all this stuff works. You've got it, Rich, K2RIW.
Fred, I have a good feeling. I don't know. Your answer basically is try it, see if it works better. But with this 9-to-1 at the end of, which is working great just for the long wire itself, which was a surprise, on 40, I made QSOs on 40 and 80, just with 9-to-1 and going out with a wire 66 feet in what Roy calls a sloper. Sloper is like from zero, from on the ground to 4 feet to the rooftop of my car out in the parking lot. That's not much of a slope for a sloper. But anyway, I don't know. I think this that 9-to-1 might help employing this screwdriver into the circuitry of an antenna that might work in my very restricted circumstances. Okay, very, very last question I forgot to ask you. How critical is the spacing of these plates? Are we talking 1/1000th of an inch, 1/1000th of an inch? How critical is it?
Because a small magnetic loop antenna is so darn high in Q, the criticalness of the spacing of the plates is, it could be 1/1000th of an inch. You might be separating the plates by using a nylon screw with some kind of a spring-like mechanism made out of a non-conductor, that as you turn the screw, you slowly advance the screw and it changes the separation between the plates, and therefore you find resonance. And how do you find resonance? Well, you could listen to the receiver and you'll start hearing noise, or somewhere in your system between the transmitter and the impedance matching and the antenna is a 50-ohm transmission line. You put a Berg watt meter in there, and if your Berg watt meter says, I've got 50 watts going forward and no watts coming back, you know you're at resonance, or you know you're getting a good impedance match. So with your Berg watt meter, you monitor the reflected power from your antenna system. Adjust that screw that's slowly changing the spacing between the plates and establishing resonance, And when you find a null in the reflected power on your bird watt meter, you hit pay dirt. And by changing the size of the coupling loops, the orientation of the coupling loops to the magnetic loop, and changing the spacing of the plates of the resonating capacitor. And by the way, you don't have to waste your money buying a vacuum variable. There's nothing magic about a vacuum variable other than the fact it can tolerate high voltage. Let me drop.
Can I add something to this? WA2CDL.
You sure can, Andy. The only thing magic about a vacuum variable is it's nice and compact. The vacuum inside can tolerate high voltage, and it's tunable. And very tunable to the nearest thousandth of an inch as you advance it through. That's the good news. The bad news is lots of bucks, and you can homebrew that without spending a lot of money. The V2 commercial driver's license, K2RIW. Go ahead, Andy.
Yes, so I just wanted to break in. I've been speaking to Rich about these magnetic loops. The only thing I don't understand, Dix, is the practicability. It's how practical this whole thing is. Because you just said it before. Isn't it true that because the magnetic loop is such a high Q, your resonance frequency is going to be very sharp? You're going to find resonance, for sure. And you'll be able to transmit on that resonance frequency. But now, let's say you want to change your frequency because you want to tune around. That means every time you change your frequency, you got to keep retuning the loop and make it resonant again, over and over and over and over again. I wouldn't want to do that. I would want to have something automatic. You know how much effort that's going to be to keep adjusting? Okay, adjust, change frequency, adjust the loop, change frequency, adjust the loop, change frequency. That to me is impractical. Do you agree with what I'm saying?
No choice, Andy.
You're being too negative on that one, Andy. This is all predictable. If you're going to QSY across the whole damn 80-meter band, or across the whole 40-meter band, or the whole 20-meter band, yes, you're going to, you probably can only QSY 20 KC before you do some retuning. But it is predictable. You can put a great big a pointer on that screw of the variable capacitor, and you know we're at the high end of the band, you adjust the pointer over at number 10. When you're in the middle of the band, you put the pointer at number 5. Or at the low end of the band, you put the pointer at number 1. So you could do make this an automatic process if you want to. You get a huge advantage of taking an antenna on, say, for instance, 80 meter, which is 132 feet long, and squeezing it down to a loop that's in the room with you. You don't have all that mechanical rigmarole out there in the real world. You picked up that huge advantage. The disadvantage is that when you QSY, you got to turn the knob. That's not a big deal. It takes you a couple of seconds to turn the knob, and now you're on the new frequency. That's not a showstopper, Andy. Don't be so negative. The basic CDO, K2RIW.
No, I'm not saying it's a showstopper, but that means I have to have the loop near me so I can adjust it. I would want to have the loop outside, out of my house and on wherever I'm going to place it, and operate it by remote control. That would be a little bit more better for me, rather than having the loop right next to me where I'm transmitting. But that's just my preference, and I'm just saying that just from the way I'm looking at it. Because I operate on 80 meters, and yes, I have an 80-meter dipole, and because I made it for 80 meters, it's broadbanded enough on 80. I don't have to keep retuning it every time I change a couple of KC. But for the loop, yeah, that may be more pronounced, and it's just my thought. That's all. All right, and. I have a lot of air variables, by the way, in my collection, so I can work with Rich on coming up with something if he wants to put an air variable on a loop. That's not a big deal. All right, I'm just pulled in. I'm going to go because I have to go to work tomorrow again, and got to get ready for that. So 73. Rick, Nick, we'll talk to you soon. WHCDL and everybody else. Have a good night.
Andy, as you know, I'm not doing this by choice, just for an exercise to play around with my loops. I live in a one-story condo where they don't allow anything outside. So
No, but this loop will be outside. I'll just have to roll it in. I have a dolly and a tripod already. I have to just roll it in after I'm done using it.
KD2FIU. Yeah. And let me just say...